Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Many people work out daily to improve their core strength and physical well-being, but how many of us work on developing our core mindset? And what does that even mean? Well, winners know for sure what core mindset means, and my guest is here today to share insight into the 8 essential mind practices of those who've made it across the finish line. We discuss everything from how to get out of our own way, that's a big one, and what changes when we practice be, do, have. We also talk about how to break through our limiting beliefs, and a big one right now, how women can use the 8 essential mind practices in Go Big Now to help them reinvent their lives so that they come back bigger and stronger than ever following this pandemic she session. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest. Julia Pimsleur is the author of Go Big Now, 8 Essential Mindset Practices to Overcome Any Obstacle and Reach Your Goals. She also wrote the best-selling Million Dollar Women. She's a master practitioner and coach of neuro-linguistic programming and the founder of the Million Dollar Women Social Venture. Pimsleur also developed the number one language teaching company for kids. It's called Little Pim. She turned that into a multi-million dollar business. So here's my guest, Julia Pimsleur. Her new book is called Go Big Now, 8 Essential Mind Practices to Overcome Any Obstacle and Reach Your Goals. Julia Pimsleur, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Great to be with you, Vicki.
Well, interesting book, and I have a ton of questions for you, but let's just talk a little bit more about you before we dive into that. You describe yourself as a serial entrepreneur, and from reading your book, it seems that maybe you've had that mindset since you were a child. Is that true to say?
Well, I was definitely someone who liked to get her own way, so, you know, a good friend of mine described being an entrepreneur as French for unemployable.
Yes, I've heard that before. Yes, definitely.
Yes.
That's what my dad always
said. I think I did have those leanings, but I didn't start my first business until my late 20s. So I wasn't sort of one of those kids with a lemonade stand, but I think I probably had the personality for it.
And your first business was what? Tell our listeners.
Well, my first business was a total and utter failure, which I wrote about in Million Dollar Women. I tried to start this script source business that was going to be, you know, faxing scripts back and forth across the Atlantic. Don't get me started. It's horribly embarrassing. But it was a huge gift because that business failed. I only lost about $5,000 and I was in my mid-20s. And it showed me this really important thing, which is you can try something and utterly fail and life goes on and people still love you and you still have your friends. And I think it gave me a lot of boldness and ability to try different things. And happily, the others didn't fail at all. And so I always think that was actually a gift that I failed early on.
Yes, yes, it is a gift. You know, something that stops people along the way is fear of failure. And I think if you can try and get that out the way early on, it's a good lesson that you can survive.
Absolutely.
So the book, Go Big Now, is really about helping us develop our core mindset. It's built around 8 mindset practices, and you say that everyone who finishes the crossing line has basically the same mindset practices and habits. So let's, for the purposes of our conversation, define what you mean by mindset, because we're not talking just positive thinking or reciting affirmations into our mirror. We're talking tangible steps here.
That's right. And look, I'm a business person, so I am the least woo-woo mindset person you'll ever interview on this show, right? It's like I love mindset practices, but in my world, they need to be in service of something, right? Whether it's feeling happier or being able to achieve your goals. These mindset practices I'm teaching have been widely used by politicians, Olympic athletes, successful entrepreneurs. These are who I call the finish line crossers. And it's not that they call them by the same names as what I'm calling them, but if you study their behavior, you start to see these patterns and these things that they're all doing. And my interest in this book was to make mindset a lot more accessible for people, because it's kind of a buzzword these days, and you hear, oh, I should have a powerful mindset, I should have a growth mindset, I should have a resilient mindset, but what does that really mean, and how do you get one? That's really why I wrote the book.
Right, right. And the book is not just for entrepreneurs. I think we need to put that out, because these mindset practices apply to every aspect of life.
Yes, and your children. My whole last chapter, a reader was just saying how she was using some of the practices with her children. I have two boys who are 13 and 16, and so these work in business. They work for setting big goals that you have personally. They also work for helping your children to set big goals and understand what kind of a mindset they might need to pursue their passions in life.
Yes. The thing that amazes me is that we, and you write about this too, is that we intentionally strengthen our core physical strength. We do exercises, we do meditation for our emotional well-being, but we don't really take it much further than that. And so, you know, why do we tend to neglect developing our mindset core strength, as you call it?
Yeah, I'm big on people building mindset core strength, just like you go to the gym and, you know, might do sit-ups or Pilates or something like that, and you know you need a strong core. Well, your mindset is your core. It's the foundation for everything you build in your life. I think it's mainly, Vicky, because this is a relatively new discipline, an area of study, right? If you go back to even, you know, the 1950s, that's not that long ago, no one was talking about mindset, right? I mean, there wasn't even child psychology back then, right? You'd practically treat children like mini grown-ups. So much has changed over the last, you know, 40, 50 years. And the method that I studied, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which is at the heart of some of the mindset practices I teach, not all of them, has only been around since the 1970s and is widely, widely used by people who want to get to success faster and enjoy the journey more.
Right. There's been a resurgence over the last few years, I think, of stoicism. A lot of younger guys are writing about, you know, the stoic wisdom, which I think comes closest to this. But you take this a step further. And I want to talk just a little bit about NLP, because people have very mixed feelings about that. I found it extremely useful myself. Just give us a very...
Did you study NLP a little bit, Vicky? That's fascinating. Not many people have.
I did. I went to see Tony Robbins. It wasn't actually Tony Robbins. It was somebody who taught his work. And I was like, oh, this is, you know, BS. And then I went back and I started researching it. And when I took some psychology classes, I thought, boy, it's bang on. and then I got my little obsession going. And, you know, as a writer, I'm an avid researcher. And so, yes, I did study it.
Oh, I love that. Well, interestingly, a lot of the big gurus in the mindset world, including Tony Robbins, have sort of drunk from the same well, right, which
yes.
is NLP, because it's a rapid mindset shifting technique. Now, what people then do with it is another story. You know, people have used NLP to manipulate people into buying things, right? People have used NLP to, you know, win negotiations in an unfair way. You know, like any tool, it can be abused. But when it's used for good, the way certainly I use it in my practice, it helps people to make really big shifts in their mindset and therefore in their life without 20 years of therapy, right? And mm-hmm. who doesn't want that?
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing I'd like to just touch on here is the reticular activating system of the brain, because that's something else that's always fascinated me. You know, the example I remember hearing, it was like 25 years ago now, but I remember Jack Canfield saying, if you suddenly buy an unusual car, let's say it's a foreign car that's new to America, you suddenly start seeing that car everywhere because your reticular activating system has been activated. So tell us how that fits into mindset practice and how it's used to filter information to us.
Yes, RAS, the reticular activating system, is something I explain in chapter 2 of the book because it was so fascinated by it when I learned about it, just like you were. It's really a collection of neurons at the back of your brain, just above where the spine ends, and it's kind of the command center for your brain in terms of what to pay attention to. So if you think about it, there's millions of bits of information flying at us every minute of every day, and we can't possibly process all that. So the RAS picks which things we should pay attention to, and then quite importantly, how we should interpret those things. And once you start studying that, and I break it down in the book in a very easy-to-understand way after wading through lots of scientific material, as you probably did too, the ultimate takeaway is that no one is perceiving the world in the exact same way. And when you realize that, it's quite freeing, because I think we waste a lot of our time, Vicky, I don't know if you would agree, worrying about what other people think of us, you know, what's going to happen if I do this or that, when in fact, we have no control how other people perceive us because it's going through their RAS, which looks totally different from ours.
Absolutely.
So I found that quite freeing, and I wrote about it in the book, where really the takeaway is, you know, figure out who you want to be and what you want to do and set your own go big dream, right, and goal, and the book does walk you through an exercise for doing that, and then don't worry about what other people think of you because they are processing things in an entirely different way than you are.
Mm. You say if we're reading the book, Go Big Now, and at any point we feel resistance, if at some point we tell ourselves, well, you know, this is all well and good, this is great, it might work for others, but it's not going to work for me, then we know we're on the right track.
Yes. Thank you for picking out that part. No one has zeroed in on that yet. What intrigued you about that?
Well, I think that, you know, we get in our own way a lot. And you address this consistently throughout the book, really, ways that we do get in our own way. And I'm wondering, you know, how can those feelings of resistance, and, you know, also, I've studied a lot of Stephen Pressfield's work. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Oh, yes. He talks I love
a
the
lot.
Art of, the War of Art. That's
yes, he talks a lot about resistance. And it's so true. We just constantly get in our own way. So you say that recognizing the resistance can help us unlock what you call the bigger version of ourself. Would you talk about that?
Well, whenever we have a strong reaction to something like, well, this is BS, or you even said it a few minutes ago when you learned about NLP, right? And you were like, oh, this sounds ridiculous. And then it turns out there was a wealth of knowledge there that you could benefit from. Often that's just our internal system reacting to the possibility of change. And one thing I do explore in the book is that we really don't like change. We think we want to change. We think we want to learn how to run a $1 million business or be a better lover or be a better parent or whatever it is. But we're really hardwired to want to stay the same. And so when we sometimes have a strong reaction to something, it's because we're afraid we might change. And so that's actually something to pay attention to. That's usually where your learning edge is. I'll give one little example from my own life that at one point I was looking to get some help with just getting over a time when I was exhausted and had been working too hard and do something restorative. And I looked on this website and there was something called the Self-Compassion Retreat. And I kind of thought, oh, self-compassion, that's like, yeah, that's for losers, right? Like, no, I'm a warrior. And then, because I've done this work, I thought, oh, wait a minute, maybe I need that, right? And I signed up for it in part because I was like, look, I don't know what that is, but I think I do the opposite of it.
Yeah.
And I learned so much from that workshop, a lot of which is in one of the chapters of the book.
Yeah, interesting. It is what we resist the most that we probably need the most.
That's right.
And continuing on from that, one of my favorite chapters is on busting limiting beliefs, because we're not going to go very far if we don't break through those. And I wanted to discuss a trend that I've noticed on social media lately a lot, where people describe themselves as broken. I find that really disturbing on so many levels when someone defines themselves as broken. And you write that a core tenet of neuro-linguistic programming is that no one is broken. So would you address that?
Yes. One of the things I love about NLP is that it starts from the place that you are fine just as you are. In fact, you're perfect. However, you might be running some programs that aren't working for you anymore. Because one of the brilliant things NLP identified is that we're all running programs all the time that we can't see. And a great comparison is if you open up your computer and, you know, you can see, I don't know, Google and Facebook and whatever you have open, but you can't see the thing that allows you to download a PDF quickly, right? Or why your windows open up the way they do really quickly. Those are all internal programs inside the computer that you can't see. Well, we're the same way, right? When you got up this morning, you put your pants on. Was it the left leg you put on first or the right leg? Like, do you remember, Vicky, which leg you put on first?
Left.
Oh, you know that. Interesting. Because if you ask me, I'd say I have no idea.
I only know that because I hurt my leg the other day. And so I did just conscious of it this morning.
Oh, well, that's fascinating. Because probably the week before, you would have said, I don't know.
Yes.
And the point is that we're all running a program called Put On My Pants, right? Or the program Brush My Teeth or Drive Home, right? How many times have you driven home and gotten there and thought, oh, I don't, wait, did I take a left there? I don't even know what I did, right? It's just mm-hmm. automatic. So those are all pretty innocuous, but what about the programs you're running that say you can't make money because nobody in your family ever made a lot of money?
Mm-hmm.
Or the program that says you're a creative person, so you can't possibly be good at sales. Or the program that says, well, you've built a successful company, but no one would ever want to invest in you. You're just not that kind of person. We're all running these programs, and those are broken programs that need to be deleted and replaced with something that can take us to our next level. And that's what NLP helps you do. It says, you're fine, but let's take a look at those programs, and if some of them aren't serving you anymore, then let's delete them and replace them, which of course is easier said than done, but that is the process I teach in Chapter 5 called Bust Your Limiting Beliefs, where you can do this at home with a friend, with a coach, with a mentor, and people are having so much fun busting through their beliefs all over the country now and writing in about it. So I'm having a blast with this.
I'm sure you are. And one of the things I want to point out is that you have exercises in here. And I hate to use the word exercises because people kind of cringe when, you know, they think, oh, I have to do work. But it's important. So explain to us why you included some homework for us.
Yeah, well, I'm a coach, and I've been using these methods for the last 5 years, and I include a lot of examples in the book of how people have used these very, you know, 8 mindset practices to bust through limiting beliefs and to make big changes in their lives that have led to greater joy, money, success, fame, etc. But they didn't do it by just, you know, listening to an audiobook and hoping for the best, right? Yeah. They did written exercises that I gave them, so I wanted to make those same exercises available to people who are either listening to the book or reading the book. And I do think that that brings about the greatest results. You know, could you get the results without doing the workbook? Probably. But I do believe that people who do the workbook will, you know, get greater results faster.
Yes, I think that's where you often have the aha moments when you're actually taking the time to, you know, put pen to paper and work through something.
Yes.
So the 3 most common potholes that prevent us from overcoming our limiting beliefs, you write, are too little action, not wanting the goal enough, and competing commitments. What do you mean by competing commitments, and why would we do something like that to ourselves?
Yeah, that's a fascinating one. Somebody on my team actually made me aware of that. It was through a Harvard study that I read, that we often don't take action on the things we want most, even though we've told everybody in our life, I want to do this, right? I want to go to grad school, or I'm going to take a year off and travel around the world, or I'm going to lose 50 pounds. But we have a hidden competing commitment, meaning we've already unconsciously committed to the opposite of it. And what that can look like is, let's say you say, I want to grow my business, I want to go from 100,000 to 500,000. But you have a competing commitment, another commitment, an unconscious commitment, to, let's say, being an amazing mom. And you somehow believe that if you grow your business from 100,000 to 500,000, you're going to have way less time to spend with your daughter, she's going to wind up hating you, and you're going to be a terrible mom, and you're going to, you know, crush the dream you've always had of being a great mother.
Right.
Well, how likely are you to really grow your business to 500,000 when you think that's going to squash this other dream?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing I'm talking about, and it happens more often than you would think. I mean, in my coaching practice, I often uncover these competing commitments to something else that is the opposite of what they came to me to help them with.
Makes sense, and another good reason there to work through the book and write things down. I'd like to address what we are currently calling the she session. You do write about this in the book, and you know, the tools you provide here can help that. A result of the pandemic, according to a January report from the National Women's Law Center, women suffered 55% of the 9.6 million net layoffs caused by the pandemic. And then add to that, hundreds of thousands more women were forced to leave the workforce to care for their children when schools and daycare centers closed. So how do your 8 mindset practices help women in this situation?
Well, I share in the book that I have reinvented myself 4 times in my career, and each time it's required a big mindset shift, and each time I could have gotten very stuck, both financially and emotionally, if I were not able to make that mindset shift. So I share those tools in the book, and I wrote this before the pandemic. I was finishing up the book during the pandemic, and I believe right now there's a time of unprecedented opportunity for people starting businesses and reinventing themselves, because the whole world is reinventing how we socialize, how we travel, how we entertain, how we go to work, right? So that's going to create a lot of new jobs and a lot of new business opportunities. However, we need to have the right go big mindset to pursue those opportunities and to not get stuck in our old stories. So there's a lot of techniques in the book for doing that that I think would be very useful for people right now facing, you know, needing to get a new job, reinvent themselves, etc.
Right. I'd like to look at how maybe we can turn this story around. I've talked with a lot of people and I've heard they're facing ageism in the workplace. You know, especially if they've been laid off, it's very hard for them to find work. They're often, you know, being interviewed by somebody who's 20, 30 years their junior. We're also seeing a rise, I think, in sexism and racism. So how can a story, let's take ageism, because the principles are pretty much the same, I think. But if we're telling our story, I can't get a new job because, you know, of my age, how do we turn that around using your tools?
Well, speaking of people facing, you know, ageism, sexism, racism, and sometimes a combination of all of those, I think we're going to see a huge wave of new businesses being built, because I think some people just won't go back. Mm. And in our community, Million Dollar Women, we have a lot of women who've had 20 years in corporate America and now are starting their own business and actually really enjoying being their own boss for the first time. So some people will just say, forget it, right? If you don't see my value, I'm going to go create my own business, and that I'm very excited about. In terms of having the right mindset for going after a job, you know, so often we are in this reactive mode where we think that whatever reaction we have to something, that is the way we must react, as opposed to understanding that we can train our minds to have a more positive interpretation of something and get ourselves into a state where we're attracting more of what we want. Now, can you magically make a job appear? Absolutely not, right? Mindset cannot solve everything. But we all know people who get into this kind of negative frame of mind or go into job interviews like, well, they're probably not going to want me anyway, or if the last three said no, this one's probably going to say no too, right? We all have friends like that, and we know where that leads, right? It's very self-defeating. Mm-hmm. So that's where mindset work can become crucial. So many people in my community, through doing this work, were able to go get jobs, create businesses, find investors, because they got themselves into that more positive, you know, go big mindset state.
Right. You know, and I always run into this when I talk with people about, you know, books and recommendations and stuff, that oftentimes these things are a daily practice. And you share this in your book. You're quite honest. You know, you were searching for this for 15 years yourself. And it is a daily practice. Talk to us a little bit about that, because there is no magic pill out there, no magic panacea.
Yeah, I mean, and look, that's where the comparison to the gym and building, you know, your core strength physically is a good comparison, right? You don't decide, okay, this year I'm going to get fit, and then I'm never going to have to ever go to the gym again.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You build it into your lifestyle. And it's the same with these mindset practices. First of all, people who practice them find much greater joy in their lives. They feel more gratitude. They feel less at the whim of their emotions, less at the mercy of what happens to them, because they're able to, you know, choose their interpretation of certain events. So there's a benefit right away to using these. But if you really practice them every day, as I do, I mean, every day I meditate, I do affirmations, I try to catch myself in thoughts that will lead to unproductive results. I have a whole format for that I teach in one of the chapters called T-Bear, which is thoughts become beliefs, which have an emotion attached to them, which leads you to actions, which leads you to results. And when you get good at this stuff, you can actually interrupt your own thoughts, Vicky. It's pretty powerful, right? Because you know where that's going to take you. And rather than going down some negative rabbit hole, you can catch yourself and reroute your thoughts in another direction. And that's why people do it.
Yeah, that's the key, catching yourself. The more aware we are, the better. One of the things you write about is not getting stuck on the how. And I think that's where many of us do get stuck. We're like, oh, I'd like to do ABC, but I don't know how or what's the best way to do it. And you say, don't get stuck there. So what should we be focusing on?
Well, the problem with how is that it's usually the thing that keeps you from taking action. Because if you don't know exactly how to do it, and I would say as women, we're very socialized to focus on the how. We're very practical, very tactical. But in fact, as once you set out on your bold journey, right, and one of my favorite mantras that I live by is fortune favors the brave, right? If you can get yourself to that brave place of getting off go, then often you find luck, right?
Yeah.
But you don't know what you're going to find along the way until you get that journey started. And if you have a positive mindset and you're in a really empowered, high energy state, you tend to attract other people to you. In fact, I often invite people to look back in their lives at a time when they did take a bold leap and didn't quite know the how. And if you look back, you see, oh, right, I decided to go, you know, to college across the country, even though I didn't know anybody there. And then when I got there, I found out that my godmother had just moved to the town next door, and I went to her house for dinner every Friday night, and it was fantastic,
right?
But you didn't know the godmother was going to be there when you moved across the country. And today, you don't know who's going to show up tomorrow if you make that bold leap.
Right, right. Let's talk about practice be, do, have, the opposite of what we normally practice. But you credit your father, you say your father practiced this long before that term was coined. So talk to us about be, do, have and what that means to you in your daily life.
Yes, be, do, have is one of the eight practices I teach in Go Big Now, and they all roll up to what I call the Go Big mindset, which I define as a set of beliefs that allow you to stay positive, overcome any obstacle, and reach your goals. And part of that is being able to envision where you'll be and not get stuck on what you have right now. So 99% of the planet lives according to have, do, be, which looks like this, Vicki. It's here's how much money I have, or education I have, or love I have, or family support I have. Therefore, here's what I can do in the world, and therefore, here's who I can be. And most people get stuck there. If they don't think they have the right resources or education, they don't pursue their big dreams. But about 1% of the population practices what I call be, do, have, where they flip it. And this is not something I made up. It's something I'm bringing to people from NLP and you know, mindset trainers. Mm-hmm. And when I say my father practiced it, he wouldn't have used those terms, but he did this very thing, which I can explain. So be, do, have looks like this. Who do I want to be? And what would that person be doing? And if you start doing those things, eventually you will have the things that person would have. That's exactly how I wrote my first book, Million Dollar Women. I thought, you know, I want to be someone who's making a difference for women entrepreneurs. Why are so few women growing big, successful businesses? So I thought, oh, what would that person be doing? You know, and at that time, I had my company, but I was a mom of two. You know, I didn't have a lot of time. I wasn't an author. I wasn't famous. I wasn't rich. I kind of thought, well, who am I to do anything about this, right? But I thought, okay, well, what would that person be doing if someone were doing something about this? I thought, well, they'd be writing about it. They'd be sharing information. They would be, you know, maybe trying to get a book proposal together. So I started doing all those things, and I was teaching women in my conference room on weekends, and I started writing for Forbes, and I started telling anyone who would listen about this issue that only 3% of women were getting to $1 million in revenues. And a few years later, not that many years later, I found myself sitting across from a publisher at one of the big publishing companies in New York City with the proposal on her desk for Million Dollar Women, the book. And she said, you know, Julia, I have about 10 proposals on my desk on this same topic. It's a very hot topic. And I thought, oh, here comes the no, right? Because who am I to write a book? And then she said, you know what? But I want to work with you, and we're going to offer you a six-figure advance to write this book because you're clearly an expert on this. You've been teaching. You've been writing about it. You've been talking about it for 3 years. So we want to work with you. That was a perfect example of be, do, have.
Excellent.
As if I had started out right and getting stuck at I'm not an author, I'm not rich, I'm not famous, I never would have done any of those things and been able to write the book.
Right, right. Love it, love it. We talked about be, do, have and how your father was practicing that before that term was coined. But so how did he represent that?
Well, my father created the Pimsleur method, which is one of the best-selling language teaching methods in the country and right. many other countries as well. And when he created that method, he was a professor of Romance languages at Ohio State. You know, he didn't have any kind of big renown or following, but he wanted to transform the way people learn foreign languages. So if you think about it, well, what would someone be doing, right, the be, if you were to be someone transforming foreign language learning, what would you be doing? Well, you'd probably be creating some revolutionary new method for teaching foreign languages. And that's what he went out and did. And at first it was very small, and he and my mother used to send out, you know, cassette tapes from their basement in Ohio. But eventually this became one of the most popular language teaching methods in the world and was taken over by a big company, and it's still, you know, a best-selling international brand. So I think having seen that as a young child, that's part of what inspired me to think, yeah, if you set a big dream and go after it, you can actually get there.
Yes, that illustrates it perfectly. So you interviewed a lot of people for the book. I'm wondering if there's a key takeaway that you took from all those interviews and that you practice daily now yourself.
One of my key takeaways from talking to so many successful entrepreneurs and leaders and artists is that if you take massive action, which means not trying one or two things, but trying, you know, 10 or 20 or 100 things, one or two of them is probably going to hit. And that most of the people who've achieved great success, it's not even necessarily that they were smarter than you or, you know, prettier than you or more creative than you. They were just willing to try a whole bunch of things and keep going until one of them hit. So that was a very empowering takeaway for me, because I have tried a lot of things that haven't worked, and it was nice to hear from all these other people that, yeah, this is actually something that everyone shares who's achieved success. We've also failed multiple times.
The book is Go Big Now, 8 Essential Mindset Practices to Overcome Any Obstacle and Reach Your Goals. Listeners can find out more about you, Julia, I know, at your website, juliapimsleur.com. A final thought you'd like to leave them with.
If you're trying to achieve a big, ambitious goal, start with the mindset work, because everything else follows from there. That's your foundation. And these are practices that anyone can master, from a child to an adult. So don't be intimidated by the term and just get started. There's amazing things waiting for you once you have some of these under your belt.
Awesome. And again, the book is called Go Big Now, 8 Essential Mindset Practices to Overcome Any Obstacle and Reach Your Goals. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. You can send questions, comments, or feedback to me via conversationslive.net. Please join us next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.